Everybody, welcome to the Shit Show with J-Bo. This is the first one I recorded with my phone. I want to thank Travis Keller over at Buddyhead for telling me how to do that. I wanted to thank Sean Ruffner for producing and creating the music you just heard. That's a new thing. Got some production here on the Shit Show with J-Bo. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope it added to it. I just talked to this amazing LA artist named Geneva Jacuzzi. She's got a brand new record out. It is called Technophilia. It's out on Medical Records, and I think it's really great. I was blown away at the thrifty, economical way she recorded this record all by her lonesome, and I think you will be too. Listen to this podcast the whole way to the end, and I really appreciate you being here and checking it out. This is the Shit Show with J-Bo, and we'll talk soon. Have a great day. Bye.
Wanted to talk to you about your new record, Geneva.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I think, I haven't listened, not enough time has passed for me to call it a masterpiece or mistress piece, whatever the proper term for that would be.
You call it a mistress piece?
Mistress piece, yeah. Masterpiece, I don't know.
Masterpiece. I want to call them masterpieces.
It's probably silly, but I fucking love it.
You love it? Yay!
I bought it two nights ago off iTunes because, I don't really pirate things unless I'm absolutely broke and they're just too expensive,
Oh, that's so cool of you.
And I probably listened to it six times in its entirety.
Yeah.
And a few things. I'd like to touch on the record first and then get into a few other cool things. So it's on Medical Records, and I hadn't heard of that label. It's very cool that they're putting this out for you or with you. Tell me a little bit about that. How did that happen?
I have a lot of these songs sort of done or demoed, a while back. Like a couple of years back. And I added some since then, but the meat of it was sort of, I had those songs done and I was performing with them, and I had a bunch of different labels sort of funny. I had a bunch of different labels sort of come into the mix, interested. And it's not that I'm a weirdo, but I do so many different things. I'm not your typical artist, I guess. I don't know if that's dumb to say, but, I do performance art. I do, visual art. I do, music. It's just, one of many things. So, and video art and all that stuff. So it's, I'm kind of a, this doesn't go the way it goes with other artists. You know what I mean? And so I just have a different aesthetic. So when I was talking different labels, I really had to kind of vibe out the people, because I know that when it comes down to it, there's a great deal, the bigger deal, but then there's also just me being kind of happy and feeling comfortable with the people involved. And there are some labels that were bigger that I was talking to, and I just kind of got it's kind of very
okay.
The industry is sort of misogynist and weird. I didn't have a manager at the time, so I'm negotiating stuff just with me, and I'm dealing with dudes, but I'm no. And then when I met Medical, they contacted me and I just talked to them, and I really liked them. They're really cool guys, and I felt that's a good place to start, and so far it's been great, because things come up and it's always arguments over details with labels and stuff, and I'm really happy that I picked some guys that were just sort of down to earth and cool and understanding, and we could work things out a lot easier. So I just felt like they were good for good for the project because it ended up being like, you know, we agreed to do it and it didn't come out for like almost a year because I had a lot of other stuff going on. So, you know, it just worked out with them. It was just good timing. Nice guys. And they have some cool shit on their roster, you know, they've got. It's weird to be on a reissue label. It's mostly a reissue label, you know. So I was kind of one of their first like newer artists, not the first, but one of them. So you know, it was like a new experience for them, a new experience for me. Yeah.
I'm sorry. So they generally reissue. Things.
Yeah, totally. They put out like Gina X and all like Der Plan and like you know just cool German shit, you know, from like. The early 80s and stuff.
Oh, no
you know,
shit.
the stuff that we all like, you know. they reissued a lot of these really cool sort of esoteric.
Nina Hagen.
I don't know, maybe. I mean, I'm not sure. I should know this. I don't know.
Well, cause I was playing your record for a friend last night who lives here and, the first thing he said, he's like, Nina Hagen, you know, you reminded him of her somehow, and I don't know if that's accurate.
Well,
I don't listen to enough of her, but I thought it was a high compliment. She seems to be pretty amazing.
Oh, that is a high compliment. I mean, well, she's an opera singer, so, I mean, and, you know, and also a brilliant artist, and, you know, if someone compares me to Nina Hagen, I'm definitely, it's a compliment. I would take that as a compliment.
More so than
Miley Cyrus or something. Like,
what's up with Miley Cyrus, man? Is she like performance art or is she a music maker? What does she do? Or both?
I don't know. She's a pop machine. She's there for the pop music for TMZ, you know, that kind of thing.
Wrecking Ball is a horrible song, and people seem to like hold that up as one of her greats, and that's all she's got. I'm not thrilled about it too much.
Well, I guess like there's always going to be mainstream. Like, remember when like Creed was on the radio? Like, who likes them? You know what I mean? Like,
it's fucking terrible. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like there's always going to be something terrible like on the mainstream radio getting all the Grammys and stuff. Like, that's just the way it goes. Like, that's the, like the yin to the yang, you know, of music. We have to have something to rebel against.
right. You know, your music is excellent for working out too. Like elliptical. I was just thinking about it, and I was like on an elliptical machine yesterday, you know, because I'm trying to, a lot of farm food around here, trying to keep, you know, not go overboard with everything. But I was listening to, like, in particular, the song Casket. It's an amazing property. Just made me keep going. Do you strive for that kind of feeling for your music? Not elliptical rock, but, you know, like, it has this inertia to it. It's always got this really, really cool kind of push forward feeling. I mean, is that an intentional thing? Is that just the drum machine? Using a drum machine?
Funny. I mean, in the writing process is one thing. I tend to always kind of like, you know, it's fun to make a song that sort of moves, that's dancing, you know, like, because when you're recording it, you're sitting in one spot, you know, so to sort of create that illusion of movement while you're, you know, in your mind and in your gut, you know, it's a lot of fun. And then I mix. This is really crazy. I mix in my car while driving.
are you for real? Like, are you actually
I'm not
driving
kidding
somebody else?
You. I'm driving the car. I mean, this is okay. Sometimes when I'm recording, I go into like crazy hours, weird times. So I'll just like, you know, it'll be late at night, you know, and then I'll like recording and I get excited and it's like. For me, and since I started recording, like, I used to do it on tape, and I had tape deck in my car, so I could just listen to my songs right away, or on CDs, but now you have those little adapters, so I bring my laptop, my shitty white laptop, which is an amazing laptop, by the way, I bring it in the car, and just start driving, and I have, like, the GarageBand file, like, up on the passenger seat, and I mix. To the because like the dream is like the driving. It's like a music video. It's like, what's that one? Sister
that sounds amazing.
But it's just like it's all about like it's like driving. It's like the fantasy, you know, like you're driving like at night and the sun's going and the scenery is moving. And it's like the thing about mixing, it's like mixing a record or mixing a song, is that you get lost in it because you're sitting in one spot and you literally dive into the song and you kind of lose perspective. But when you're in constant motion, like this is, I don't think most people do this, but this is just me. It's like, you got to have that constant motion of changing scenery and like also having to be alert driving. It takes you out of like just diving too deep into the song. So you have it almost like you're hearing it in the peripheral, you're experiencing it as if you're like in a music video. And then we're just like, you know, at stoplights, I would make little level adjustments, but kind of pull over. Sometimes I do while I was driving, which is like totally dangerous, like turning things up and down. But I had to like match the momentum of the car moving and like LA streets just kind of moving by. You know, I don't, it's totally dangerous. I wouldn't recommend it.
That's funny. Awesome. Do you feel like an assistant can help you with that? Like you're driving, you're like vocals up, drums up. I mean, would that be, or do you have to kind of do
that? I mean, that would be ideal, but I'm kind of a loner and I'm recording. Chances are if I'm recording, I'm not hanging out with people, you know, so it's just, so it's just loner zone, you know, weird. And plus like anyone would be, those are things you do when you're alone. Those are the weird things you do when you are alone. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of, like, cool thing about, I mean, ultimately, it's like, you know, bands tend to generate, like, the best music because it's good to have that bouncing around. But it is kind of interesting when you have, like, artists who are total loners and just do the, because you do weird shit, you know what I mean? When you're by yourself. When you're by yourself, like I'm more experimental, like with my vocals, like I'll just drag, you know, but I would be totally embarrassed to do it that in a studio, you know, like with like people looking at me, I'd be shy, you know, but like when I'm alone, I could just do weird shit. I can mix in my car, you know, I don't have to have anyone tell me like, that's weird. Well, that's not a good idea. That's not good.
I really like that concept. I was picking up on the motion of the record for sure. So you're kind of solitary with your work now. Do you have musicians that play on your record, or is it all just you? How does that work?
It's pretty much just me. I think on Cannibal Babies, I had my friend come over and he laid a keyboard track down because I wanted something like with heavy chords. And I'm actually not that great at like being like C D E E like that. And he just happened to be there. So aside from that, I just, you know, the record is me alone in a room, just kind of noodling, you know, or tinkering around.
That's fucking awesome, Janine. You know, I play guitar and I mess with keys and I always found it, you know, guitar is kind of, as Trent Reznor put it, like very like fragile or frail or brittle or something. Like, you know, you have to tune it, you have to hold these chords. Keyboard, you can kind of like, there's this insta tone happening, you can just click in your tone and all of a sudden you're generating. Do you find that are you classically trained in any way, or is the keyboard a really great way for you to put forth your ideas, because it's kind of pure melody, you don't have to worry about a tone, and it always kind of sounds like very produced as opposed to an organic, I don't know, you know, a fucking acoustic guitar.
Yeah, I mean, keyboard for me, it's just like, you know, I've always been sort of DIY, solo, independent artist. I never have, like, a bunch of music or, like, instruments around me. I'm not classically trained in any way. You know, I do play bass guitar. There's some bass guitar on the record. But even that bass guitar literally was just plugged straight from the guitar into, like, the headphone jack into my laptop. Like, no preamp, no, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's actually, the funny thing about this record is like the tracks are recorded in literally like, you know, how a 12-year-old, you know, would record in a garage band, like getting a new computer, like just, wow. They're wrong. Everything I do is sort of like a shortcut because I'm just doing it alone. And I really don't care if it sounds like pro or not. You just want to get the song down. But half the time it ends up sounding good. Like especially when you're using like keyboards, and I tend to pick certain sounds that like literally, I mean, an engineer would be like, oh, you've got to, you know, you've got to deal with there's like, you know, electronic currents going in. They have to match those. Like, you know, like all of these things they have to learn about for like certain keyboards to pick up that quality sound. But the thing is like, I tend to use sounds, like types of sounds that translate through any sort of like recording process. And it's like, and also I'm really like, I'm good at like, you know, I'm using a very DIY thing, but I'm also pretty good at like engineering and like recording in the sense that I know not to overdrive certain things. I know that like, you know, just I'm good at I'm like a charlatan in a sense with when it comes to recording. Like I can find the easy way to actually get a sound that and get a thing that like worked. You know, like you have a synth saw, you could record it with your iPhone, dump it in and cue it. You know what I mean? And mix it a certain way to where it would sound great. You know, it's just sounds at the end. It's really just sounds, and a lot of it comes into the mix tool, which I really enjoy. You mean, and EQing and all that stuff. So, but yeah, and I love that about electronic music is you can take a drum machine beat and.
It sounds fucking kick-ass right out the box.
You can recycle it like 20 times and then boost it through like a compressor. And it's like, you don't realize that you just actually like, it, you know, it came from a bounce down MP3, then boosted back up to like an AIFF, then ran through a compressor and it sounds just like a new drum machine because you're just taking sound, you're crunching it. You know what I mean? you're filtering it, you know, they're just sounds. A lot of the stuff, like the drums I do with my mouth too, like the percussive stuff, like the hi-hats I always kind of do with my mouth, just because it's like, it sounds the same. And like, you know, if you have like the reverse, like when you want that like whip effect, you know, you can do that with your mouth. It's just like, but when it's all mixed, it sounds like normal. You just mix it, you can run a like an effect on it and it'll just sound like, you know, whatever. It's just kind of like, you know, there's like 50 ways to bake a cake or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, how many records have you done? Five records? Four records?
I don't know. Like two that are like, that have been like on Spotify, you know, and then the rest are all just like Mario's. Like, yeah, like five or six. And then also like a bunch of these things I call my zombie shark archives, which are basically like mixes of like 30 tracks of just like demos and little things. And then I also make these other mixes that I sell at shows. So technically like, you know, like 10, but on the books too. You know what I mean? Two official, 10 like, you know, weird mixes that I make. Cause I have hundreds of songs. So I just kind of like, I throw them into different mixes sometimes. And I'm always like recording new stuff. But I think that when it comes to like the, you know, what the emphasis on for me has always just been like resourcefulness. And then like, you know, I'm never in an ideal situation. That's the thing. It's like, I'm never really in an ideal situation. Like I don't have the right gear. No, I don't. Of course I don't prefer that. I would love to have everything that I want. But the point being is that like, I don't let that limit me when it comes to, it's like, if a song wants to come out, like I'll just do a shitty version of it in my mind just to get it out. And then half the time it ends up sounding good, even like my little scratcher, you know? Okay, yeah. And I'm like, well, let's use the scratcher. Like there's so many bands that like you hear the record and then you heard the demo and the demo is actually better. You know?
It's more close to the inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like to keep some of that. Like the cool thing about, you know, what I've done is like I've taken stuff that technically wouldn't be considered finished product and then finished it. But I think that this record sounds pretty finished. I mean, there's lots of stuff going on.
This record sounds really finished, and I'm actually, the manner in which you did it, I'm kind of surprised because it does sound, I mean, totally pro and kind of perfect to me.
At the end, what this one is like, I have the record kind of pretty much done, and then I have my friend Chris Cody, who's like a really big producer and a friend and also a fan. He likes my music. He offered to work on it for free. So the reason why it sounds extra good is because we took all my GarageBand files and took them to Sunset Sound Studios in Hollywood.
You did this record on GarageBand just for the record.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's the only thing they have. That's fucking great.
I did it on GarageBand, and then we took it to Chris's studio, and he literally, he imported all my GarageBand files into Logic, then into Pro Tools, and ran the tracks through his rig, and like compressed it, boosted it, you know, he gave it that. He made it to where it sounds like good on the radio, good anywhere, you know, and it's like, he basically took my songs that were like pretty good, sounding good and made him sound really good. You know, like, he gave it that, like, pro gloss, which is so cool, because, like, we were using my GarageBand files.
Chris Cody?
Chris Cody, yeah. He's, like, a rock star producer. He does, you know, he does, like, Yeah, 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 Jimmy on the Radio. Like, he's, you know, he does all the big Beach House. He's a Beach House. You know, he does, like, the big indie stuff. Like, he usually gets paid a lot, and he did this for free for me as a favor, because he's a solid.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Cannibal Babies, the video.
Ah, the video, yeah.
That video is very, very cool. Watched it a couple times. And I'm trying to convey this thought. There's this, like, there's you, obviously, like, you know, attractive young female doing their thing. But then, like, you'll, like mar it somehow with, like, making, like, black teeth and something coming out of your mouth and just, like, kind of it's very interesting to me. I had a friend who I was making a flyer for a band. I just want to put this guy's face on. He just, like, scribbled, you know, he scribbled over the face, and that was the flyer. And what's your thoughts regarding that? I mean, how are you trying to present yourself? Like, are you maintaining this balancing act?
Well, the video is, you know, collaboration with my friend, who's a really brilliant artist, Michael Shows. And we were just going to do something for, like, a show, like a backdrop visuals for this performance I was doing.
Yeah.
And it ended up being a video. But the thing about the video is that, you know, it's conceptual. It's actually, like, an art piece. Like, so there was a theme of, like, this polished, like, health, like, sort of contained aerobic kind of thing mixed with this disforming kind of digital and the black water. It's a very, like it's like mediatized technology sort of invading into, like, almost the health workout industry, which is creepy. It's a creepy topic.
Yeah,
it's a very futuristic topic. And so that's sort of what we were touching on with that. You know, it's like, let's make a video that looks pretty generic with these elements that are strange, that kind of allude to, like, a science fiction sort of concept, you know what I mean? Of technology sort of invading this, like, healthy kind of idea, which is sort of what's going, you know, living in Los Angeles is really weird because it's just that. It's like, you know, you've got your heart meter on your phone, you know, you've got your, like, you know, all these things, like, all these, like, healthy things that we're all, like, sort of plugged into our phones, but trying to stay healthy and, like, be organic and natural and, you know, bodies, but we're sort of just stuck in this technology sort of mindset, you know, which is weird. And not that it's a bad thing, it's just an interesting thing to sort of present conceptually in a video. And the data machine looked really fucking terrifying, you know what I mean? Like, with the morphing faces and stuff like that.
Which kind of plays into the title of your record. I looked the word up, technophilia.
Yeah.
It's a strong
enthusiasm. It's a little different.
Strong.
What's the definition?
What's that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, almost like a fetish. And then I changed the spelling to sort of, it was just like a little commentary on Ophelia of Hamlet. So I added, you know, the O instead of the I.
The E, you added an E, right?
Oh, I mean an E, sorry. I haven't had my coffee yet.
In the back of my mind, I'm like, she added an E. I said, what's up with that? And you were stumbling for it. I'm like, no, you added an E. I've been thinking about it for 2 days.
Oh, well, it's kind of a funny reference. It's just like a little, like, because I like to think of the album as like a play. So it was sort of an Ophelia kind of reference. Technophilia. It's like a new modern Hamlet, technology Hamlet, like techno Hamlet character, feminist, little feminist link. Yeah. My form of feminism is really weird. I'm trying to figure it out because I do think of myself as a feminist. But
yeah, how so? What does that mean to you?
Well, I mean,
being a feminist.
Well, the thing is, like, I didn't study feminism in school, so I'm not an expert, but I do experience it in work because I've done lots of, like, I've done so many projects. I've done, like, you know, I just counted, like, 30 video, music videos, you know, or something like that. And like, and has traveled actually to 30 to 31 different countries, like most of the time alone, putting up art performance, like in these like really foreign places. I've done lots of collaborations. I've done, you know, it's just like, I've experienced what it's like to be sort of a prolific female in the world, which is an interesting thing. It can be quite challenging at times, you know? And I often feel really, have to deal with the fact that I am a female being an issue when it comes to doing something where I'm like, you know, I'm head of like a production of like 12 people or more, and I have to get people to listen to me. And there's always, you know, there are ways of doing that. And it's not always easy being a female to sort of be in that position, you know. I'm constant, you know, people think I'm a psycho or I'm a bitch or I'm overly emotional or whatever. And I'm all those things, but, you know, I'm just kind of sort of trying to understand how to, like, to get shit done and not deal, you know, in a way that is, like, sufficient, not having to deal with. But the things that we do, I think, still live in a man's world in a funny way. And also incorporating
so.
That. Yeah, and also deal with the fact that, like, a lot of the art and music that I like are masculine sort of things. And how do I feel about myself when I don't really identify with that because I'm a female, you know? So there's, like, all of these elements to sort of incorporate, like, a lot of the time, like, when you're doing stuff, when you're actively doing stuff, production, you see this. It's pretty easy to hate that fact that you're a female because it just makes it harder. So it's like, you know, it's kind of me sort of trying to figure out a way to, you know, find something really amazing about the fact that I'm a female doing it, you know. And that's kind of my form of feminism. There's a lot of, it's like strength through experience and also like, you know, empowering other women and really kind of bringing attention to it without overblowing it, without kind of it being counterproductive, that sort of thing. So finding
without being obsessed with it and it becoming a self-fulfilling.
And without getting angry about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where the term feminist kind of got its, like, you know, connotation of, like, you're a feminist. It's like, you know, like, I'm a feminist. And, like, women are beautiful. Women are, we have things that men don't have. And it's like, you know, that kind of thing. But it's hard to see that stuff when you're sort of, you know, like, it, just in the music industry, like, there's only, like, a few female artists in the field of, like, you know, hundreds of males in the same, like, category or genre or whatever. And the second that you come out, you're immediately put up against the only other female that happens to be doing something kind of similar to you. So it's almost like you're set to be competing against her, you know? And it's like when all the guys are sort of just, like, hooking each other up and high-fiving and, like, you know, you know, it's like boys' school, boys' club. And women sort of have a weird sort of thing where we're like, we get pinned up against each other and it creates this competitive thing, which is actually counterproductive. It keeps us sort of isolated and alone. Or if that makes any sense. So I just feel like it's good to like, kind of speak about it a little bit, but do it in a way that it's like, we got to be like joining together, you know, like, because there's not enough of us.
I lived in Seattle for a long time, and female bands are kind of like the only thing that matters for quite a few years now. And maybe
yeah, that's awesome.
Become, you know, I
well,
don't
Seattle's
know.
A weird place, which I like weird places because things like that happen, you know.
Speaking of Seattle, now the last time I interviewed you, because you're going to come up and do a show. And, you know, Geneva, I obviously don't know you very well at all. I've seen some mm-hmm. of your press. I've seen your Facebook page. I've talked to you once or twice before. You had a crazy fucking thing happen to you. And I got to admit, a couple of powers that be were like, is this for real? Because, you know, you sent me this picture.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, you were scheduled to come do a show in Seattle. And
yeah.
All of a sudden, you got something happen to you. And your face
My
blew up like you'd been stung by a bee.
I got some kind of weird dermatitis rash where basically my face was covered in blisters, like oozing blisters. Like
yeah.
The entire surface of my face was like a collection of hundreds and hundreds of oozing. It almost like cold sores, but they were just weird. It was like a disgusting sort of bubbling rash on my face. And then I had been planning to do that show at Reed College for quite some time, and we had a lot set up.
In Portland, yeah.
In Portland, and I was not going to not go. And, like, for me, again, it's just like, it's like how I record, like, okay, things aren't ideal, let's come up with another solution. And so I wrapped my face up like the Invisible Man, basically, in bandages. And went to Portland. And but before I went, I went to the doctor. I went to the clinic, and I showed them, and they thought it was like one thing, and they gave me this antibiotic for it. But I ended up having an allergic reaction to the antibiotic. So while I was in Portland, not only did I have my face covered in these oozing blisters, I had my face started swelling from the antibiotic that they gave me. Yeah, so I had an allergic reaction with this. It was like a double thing. And it got to the point where I couldn't talk. I couldn't see. I was actually blind by the time that, like, that I barely did the show. Like, I had to wrap my face up in gauze and then put a mask over that. And I did the show like that. But that night, it just got worse. So the next day when I was supposed to go to Seattle, I was actually blind. So, and so I went back. I just ended up going back California and went straight to the ER after that. So I didn't make the Seattle show. That would have just, it was so hideous. Like, my
I
mom
saw
and
that.
Saw
I was like, who the fuck would that happen to? Who else would that happen to? That was insane.
The funny thing is, like, so I went to my mom's house after, and, like, no one could look at me because it was so horrific. But I was like, my mom would be in her bed, and I would just pop my face in real quick, and she'd be like, ow.
I just stared at this picture and was showing it to people. Was like, does this look like Geneva Jacuzzi to you?
Oh,
and they're like, absolutely not. I'm like, well, I think it is. She can't do the show. Anyway, I'm so glad. Like,
I look like an Inuit. I look like an Inuit. But, like,
it was
crazy. Well, I mean, but, like, no, I ended up shooting a bunch of art videos with my face all big like that. Like, I set up this scene where I was in a hair salon, and my mom, because my mom has a hair salon in her house, like a home salon. And so I shot all this footage of me looking like that, just because I was like, well, interesting thing about that is, like, I didn't know what was going to happen. No, they didn't know what was going on with my face. They just, if the swelling went down, but the blisters, like, what the fuck, you know? And,
yeah.
It was scary because I pretty much lost my face for a couple of weeks, but and I didn't know if it was going to come back. But it came back, and then it also, but then after that, like, sometimes the rash comes back, it's pretty scary. But now I find that if I just go, I have to get, like, steroid shots when it starts to happen. I didn't know what it was. It's just like this mystery rash, but I don't know. It's scary. I hate it when that shit happens on your face because, you know, I'm a girl. I'm like, cute.
Yeah, I mean, you look like a complete. I mean, I got stung by a bee in my foot, and that was traumatic. You look like a different person.
Yeah. Yeah, and I freaked everyone. Those poor kids at Reed College, like, were so freaked out because I was like. I was so freaky. It was so freaky. And I couldn't eat because it was like I had bandages, like literally the Invisible Man. I was like a mummy, you know, with a giant mummy head and sunglasses. It was a really weird look. But I actually did a show like that. I just couldn't do two. Like the Seattle, like it got so much worse after the show that like I had to cancel the Seattle show. I felt really sad, but.
Hey, listen, don't worry about it. Anybody would have. I mean, that's something super painful. just so bizarre.
Yeah, it was really weird. It sucked, but I had to make the most of it.
I had a question about drugs. Do you think drugs improve music making or merely change it? And what kind of drugs are the hip kids doing these days? I don't know if you do drugs. I don't really. I'm out of it. But, like, is there drugs in L.A.? Is it debaucherous? Is it, like, the 80s hair metal scene? What's going on down there?
Well, that's funny because, like, I'm actually sober right now. Like, but I did do a lot of drugs and alcohol and stuff. I ended up having to go to rehab, like, 8 months ago. So I've been, you know, I'm on this, like, post-drug sober thing. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. And that was kind of crazy. The ducks, but you know what's funny is what I did realize, or what I think I know about ducks. I mean, I still don't know how I feel about the whole thing. But, you know, like I was listening to a lot of the music that I made when I was on a lot of drugs. And it sounds, I mean, it, for me personally, like, it's not that much different than the stuff that I make now, you know. The only thing that the drugs did towards the end was actually make it harder to do the music. Like, you just make it, like, it prevents you from getting it done efficiently and getting to the point. Like, you do too much noodling and blinking off and, you know, like, you're inspired to do it because you're high or whatever, but it takes, like, you know, a week to get to a place that you could have gotten to it just, like, in a moment of sobriety or of clarity, you know. So, and some people, like, when they do drugs, it really influences the music, it changes the music. For me, it didn't really change the music so much. It just, it like, sped it up or slowed it down, the process of it, you know, and it isolated me because I was doing a lot, had a problem. I had a really bad problem, so I was isolating, and that's just, like, that's hard, you know. but I think that drugs, like, you know, if I were to give any, like, any of the viewers out there, like, it just makes things more difficult.
They do.
Yeah, they backfire. Like, there's a moment, you know, some people don't have addiction problems, so they can use drugs every once in a while and have fun and get stuff out of it. But for anyone with, like, just even a mildly addictive personality, what ends up happening is you associate the creative process with the drug, and you think that the drug is making this, and but that takes the power out of, like, you and what you're doing. So then that's why a lot of people have a lot of musicians have a hard time quitting, because they don't think that they can record or create without them. And that's really sad, because that's just like a mindset. That's just like an addiction trying to use the music to get what it wants. And that's, for me, it's like, the thing that got me off of drugs was the music, because I actually got real at a moment. I realized that, like, okay, I have this thing where I'm like, I have, you know, I used to be able to do this quickly or at this time or get to these results, and I'm finding it difficult. I'm getting emotional. I'm getting distracted. It's just, my life is falling apart, you know, and it was like, it was the music actually that made me realize that, you know, I needed to stop doing drugs, because it was making it harder for me to make the music. And the music is the only reason why I'm here and why we're talking on the phone. Like, what, you know, it's the most important thing to me.
Thank God.
And the art. Yeah. So now I'm like,
I
back.
Your album, this interview, to revitalize my shit, you know?
Wait, what did you say?
I think that album and this interview are going to revitalize my shit. I'm happy to be back in the game talking to people. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. Inspirado.
Okay, so a real quick question, Allie. Are you a riff lady or a chords lady? Like, it may sound really stupid, but if you had a picture, like, Black Sabbath with the riffs, or the Beatles with their chords, as far as classic rock, manly rock, what do you like?
I'm a layered riffer. So I will riff mellow riff, you know, like you do like a mild, like three tracks of mild riff to create the chords. And then I throw a hard riff over the top of it for the
layered riffer. Okay.
I'm a layered riffer. Because I'm really not that great at playing chords. I find the note, and then I layer it, and then I riff over the whole thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Or whatever. But
now, I'm a TV. Turn me on.
Yeah.
That's a great fucking line. I was walking out of the I'm here in a small town in Western PA, and I was walking out of LA Fitness, right? And that line came on. I'm a TV, turn me on, and it hit me about three different ways at the same time. I thought it was brilliant. Tell me about that look, just that line.
Well, you want to know a funny thing about that lyric is when I was a little kid, I had this, like, play friend, or, like, you know, one of my mom or grandmother's friend's kid, and it was this little boy, and he was like, 3 or 4 and I was like 3 or something, and we would just be playing, and then he was kind of a really obnoxious kid, you know, and he would run around the house going, I'm a TV, turn me on, I'm a TV, turn me on, you know, so it's really from the, something that kid, this kid, this little brat, you know, would say, but it was cute, you know, and my mom, you know, shortly before, like, recording that, like, my mom reminded me of that kid, and I was like, oh my god, that's so funny, and then I heard the ding, 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 ding. Dun, 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 dun. It just came in my head, and then that was it. The song, I literally that's wrote easy. That song in, yeah. I wrote that song in like a couple hours. Done. Like, it's one of the easiest songs. I mean, it's a really minimal song, you know, but it's just,
okay.
I like it when things just get straight to the point like that. Like, you have the lyric, and then the melody just pops in your head for it. It's kind of one of those kind of songs. and then, of
I
course,
love that too. I love that too.
I love the things that kids say because, you know, they're actually quite abstract and arty, you know?
Like, yeah.
Because kids are like little baby geniuses, dumb idiots, you know, but savants. We're like the tiny savants, you know?
Absolutely. I remember getting stoned one time and hearing like a 3-year-old talk and just being like, this is gold, all of it. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's gold. You know, I get a lot of lyrics like from weird kids. Science shows and stuff, the way they talk about science, you know, and like, and just, I don't know, it's like, you know, the adolescent sort of approach to any kind of deep concept is generally the best.
Yeah. Now, Macho Island was also a song, Geneva, that I really enjoyed. I'm kind of a smooth pop guy, and that's like, seems like the smooth pop cut on the record, if I had to label it in a bizarre way. And it was reminding me of the Culture Club a little bit. Tonight. Is the Culture Club like big right now in L.A.? Is it happening? Do you listen to the Culture Club ever?
Boy George? Hello?
Yeah.
I mean, it was big in the 80s, but I mean, I'm obsessed with Boy George. I've actually met him, too, randomly. Yeah, at just some crazy moment in Brussels, Belgium, after a show, I ran into him in this empty room and we ate dinner together. It was totally just coincidence.
Okay, well, what you got to do, Jeannie, next time, if you don't mind me saying, when you're singing the song live, and do you play the song live?
Well, I can't. I mean, I perform it live. I have to play the pre-recorded tracks. That's why I have to perform
what
it.
I mean, you sing to it, though, and you perform
it. I sing it, yeah. I sing it, yeah.
If you sing the song over the end, Time, Clock of the Heart, the Culture Club song, it kind of goes along with, it might be great to interject in it, you know, just to give.
Time won't give me time, and time makes me love you. I have this bird who, whenever that saxophone part, the sax solo on that song, whenever that goes on, my bird freaks out, he loves it. but yeah, so Macho Island reminds you of that, really? That's crazy. I was like...
Believe me, sing the Culture Club song over the end of it, and it'll be just fucking gold, I think.
Oh, right. We can do a mashup.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Live. I love it when people hear my songs or see my shows and give me, like, something. Boy George or Michael Jackson. Like, those kind of things are, you know, I'm just like, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so... Are you... Do you frequently get asked about Mr. Ariel Rosenberg?
Sometimes. Yes and no. I mean, we were together for a long time, so.
I
want to ask me about
record, and I love Pom Pom, and I was seeing some, it's probably just me projecting, I was seeing some, like, parallels between the two, and I don't know. Are you influenced by that guy in particular, his latest record? Is he influenced by you? I think it could go both ways. I mean, you both have been like kind of probably bouncing ideas off each other for many, many years. I know you were in the same band. Is there some back and forth?
Yeah, well, we were practically married for like 7 years. I mean, we were together. So,
yeah.
And friends for, I mean, I have a decade of, he's been my close friend and was my partner for a long time. Yeah, I mean, a big reason why we even got together is we have a very similar, we share a taste in the type of music, you know, and he tends to, he'll go into, like, so many different directions, but really at the core, like, he's a doc,
Yeah, absolutely.
But God, like, he loves, like, Robin Gristle. Like, he loves, like, you know, like, early industrial goth, like, Al Jorgensen. Like, he's, you know, Ariel is a goth, more goth than most people we all know. And, you know, and so am I, in a sense. So, like, those, you know, the, that minimal, that cold, that dark sort of cadence, like, that comes through. And it really, like, you know, I think when records are made, like, it's not so much that, like, I mean, for me, like, I'm not like, okay, this album's going to sound like, you know, like, I don't keep, like, a theme and a style of music for the record. It's literally just the songs kind of come out at a time. So I feel like, you know, for Pom Pom, he had that. He was in that mode, you know, as opposed to a different mode that he was when he was younger, you know. It's just kind of, I mean, I think it's just because we all kind of come from the same love for a lot of the similar music, a lot of the same music. And, we, you know, and he, of course, he influenced me. And I'm sure I influenced him in his own, in my own weird way.
Maybe for sure,
I'm
for
crazy.
Sure.
I don't know. But yeah, you know, we're friends. And actually just saw him last night, which is funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's all there. All the ingredients are there. Yeah.
I mean, it's not that similar, but there's just some tones, just some vibes, a particular sound here and there where I was like, just kind of similar to me. Have you ever, do you like Tame Impala at all?
I haven't really listened to Tame Impala, to be honest.
I was hearing a little bit of some of the keyboard. They're brilliant. That guy, he actually, the records he does all himself, and he has a band that actually plays with him, but he does everything kind of like you. And I don't know. I was just,
I need to get a band together, but I'm like, I've been thinking about getting a band together finally. I'm like, I don't know.
Are you touring on this record, Geneva?
I think I'm going to go to Europe in a few months for a Euro tour. U.S. tour, it's weird. It's like, you know, it's since I'm a solo artist, And my label is small. I don't really get, like, label support and stuff. So it's not always easy to get on the road when you're kind of just starting from scratch, you know. So it boils down to money. If I can get some money together. And you make money on tour, but you need money before the whole thing, too. So it's just, like, I have to figure out a way to make that happen. But I want a tour, like, everyone hears this, I could open up. That makes it easy.
Come to Pittsburgh. You have a place to stay.
I do so many Europe tours because just it's easier for some reason to get around there in my position. But the states are different. It's so spread out. You have to have like a fucking, you have to have like a like a moving like caravan show, which is, you know, it's a production.
No, I was on your merch page, and a couple interesting things popped out. I had a couple questions for you. One, so you were supposedly listening to some punk bands while you screen printed your awesome Geneva Jacuzzi shirts, which I want to go. I'm actually curious if that's true, and if so, what punk bands were you listening to?
God, well, I did that like I put that up there like a year ago, so.
Okay.
I was probably listening to, like, maybe it wasn't even, like, punk, totally. Maybe, like, I probably was screen printing to Sisters of Mercy. I'm for some reason, that's popping up.
Sisters of Mercy, maybe?
Like, early Sisters.
Or, like, the Thompson Twins at all?
Thompson Twins? Yeah, I mean, I like them.
I was obsessed with them when I was, like, seven.
You were? Like, hold me now.
That's their worst song.
I like it when they go,
yeah. The guy that sings that is named Joe Leeway. He had dreadlocks.
I only know the radio hits. I haven't, like, dug into the deep cuts. You
should dug into In the Name of Love era. It's pretty damn good.
Ooh. Yeah, I love when radio, I was just talking about this recently, when, like, you got these sort of radio hit bands that have these, like, huge hits, you know, but they have these other records that are, like, good. Like, what's the matter? Like, Missing Persons, they're another great
band. Oh, yeah, great.
You know, great. Bozzio, like, great band. Like, some of the, like, there's this one, Surrender Your Heart. Oh, it's like a ballad. on that missing person's record. Like, that was like one of my favorite songs, you know.
Checking out. Is Surrender Your Heart by those guys?
Oh, God. Talk about it, like, getting all, like sentimental and, like, ooh, you know, like, OMD, they're another band like that.
I saw them open for Thompson Twins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I was seven.
When you're seven, I'm like, wait. OMD are amazing. I'm 34. I'm not too far behind you.
I know. I read it.
OMD, Simple Minds, they're another one. They had like a big radio hit, but all their early stuff was like crazy good. Crazy good.
Yeah, that big hit gives me a strange feeling, like strange nostalgia. I can't even explain it, but I don't know if I want to turn the station or leave it. It's really weird, that song in particular.
Weird.
Or a song like Kyrie by Mr. Mister. What do you make of that fucking weird jam?
I'm only thinking of Take These Broken Wings. Isn't that Mr. Mister?
Take these broken wings.
Isn't that Mr. Mister?
I think it is. Yeah. I think it is.
The Book of Love. I mean,
love will
open up and let us see. Yeah.
Okay, now getting back to the punk thing, how cool is Don Bolt?
Don Bolt is rad. I see him all the time. He lives here in LA, so he's.
I interviewed him about 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was a fun interview.
He talked to Blue Streak for an hour and a half almost. It was crazy.
Yeah, he knows a lot. He's like an oracle, you know. He was dating my friend this like last couple of years, and he's an Ariel fan. He does this really cool club in LA, and I play there sometimes at the Hush Club. It's like his thing. Like, he's around, and you know, I just saw him at one of the shows like a couple weeks ago, and he's awesome. Don Bowles is like, but yeah, he's just an oracle. He's a staple. You know,
he's great.
The trophy. He's our LA trophy. You know, he's awesome. He's so smart. He knows so much about music, and he's like incredibly talented.
He really is. Those backup vocals he did on Pom Pom are stellar.
Well, yeah, and he can like he produces. Like, he's great. Like, he's and you know, like whenever I'm doing a show, it's like he'll mix the sound. Perfect. Like, he's just got an ear. He's got the magic ear. And he knows. And he's also knows how to play and just make something sound like, you know, it's going to be good. You know, it's something that's mediocre and he just knows how to fix it.
Give me something good. Are you familiar with that song by Ryan Adams, Give Me Something Good?
No.
It's a good song. It reminds me of Ronnie Millsap from the 80s, a crossover
I
country.
Saw Ryan Adams when I was going to the Chris Cody studio at Sunset Sound. I think Ryan Adams had a studio there. He had this like really old car. Like one of those like classic cars. But I never really listened to his music. I'm bad. I don't listen to a lot of...
That's okay. That song's great, though. Give me something good. So I wanted to ask you just one more thing, and this has been like awesome talking to you. We've been at it about an hour, and it'll give me like plenty of material to kind of like just probably leave as it is, maybe cut off the very beginning or something. But right. you were selling some of your underwear, stripped and shipped for $75. Not a bad deal, I might add. But
well, that's one day soiled, and then if you can, it goes up to like $200 for how many days soiled. Okay,
is that how it works?
Yeah, but you know what? I don't even, that's just, no one buys those. I mean, it's just there. It's just like.
I wonder if anybody bought a pair. That's
all. Well, no, they did buy them when I first did. That was another thing where, I mean, it's kind of weird, but like, I had to go on a tour. I had no money. I had these shows, so I couldn't get there. You know what I mean? Like, what's the girl to do? Like, I literally was just kind of like, fuck it. You know what I mean? Like, I needed to get on tour. And it actually, when I first put them up, you know, people bought them and it pretty much, it gave me that little jump start for my tour, the funding I needed. It was really, it was very useful. I mean, I don't know how to feel about it, but you gotta do, you know, it's just fucking underwear. If someone wants them, really, it's like, I don't care, whatever. You know,
like,
I've done way more like degrading things. Just like trying to get paid from an asshole, like, you know, if anyone, you know, is more degrading you know, like doing a record deal, trying to do a record deal is more secreting than selling your underwear on the record, that's for sure. Like, it's all relative, you know. I got to take that down. The thing is, I'm forgetting to take it down.
I detect a little embarrassment now. I thought it was fucking hilarious.
It's funny, but I'm just like, oh, I just gotta take it down because it's like a serious topic for like interviews and people keep asking me about that. I'm like, I don't know, it's just something I did. I mean,
honestly, if I thought I could get something for like, if I was in your position, I thought I could get something for my underwear, I would do it too, in a second.
Totally. I mean, really, it's like it's just my dirty laundry. I hate doing laundry. I really do. I'd much rather ship it out. I don't know.
So funny. Well, I wanted to congratulate you on an amazing record. I look forward to like imprinting this record on my psyche to where I know it like note for note. I feel like it's that type of thing, you know?
Sick. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Then we'd be like psychically linked, you know, somehow.
What's that? Say that again.
There'd be some parallel dimension that you and I both sort of are linked up to on the same hard drive. Musical.
Yeah. Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, that's really
cool. Geneva, it's been a pleasure. You've been with the Shit Show with J-Bo. And I'm going to put this up in the next, I don't know, next week for sure. And I hope I'm going to try to get it on iTunes actually and get it out there. And I think the word needs to be spread. I really think this record, I've been telling people that it's going to take you to the next level of notoriety or maybe a couple levels beyond that. I do believe it's that good, so whatever.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Well, have a wonderful day there in sunny LA, all right?
All right, you too. Take it easy.
Well, I'm in PA, but yeah, same deal. I got it.
Okay. All right. We'll bundle up.
All right. It was snowing this morning. All right. I'll talk to you later. Have a great one.
Okay, all right.
Bye-bye.
Hello?